Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 80. It's August 19th, 2020. Right in the margins, I have on my shelf the first book I read at Providence College, Dubliners, a collection of short stories by James Joyce. It is the very book I purchased for $1.45 in September 1966 in the campus bookstore, a compass book published by the Viking Press. Back then, I wrote on the cover my name and my dorm room, Guzman 211. The green of the front cover has faded and the white of the back cover has yellowed with age, but the book is full of life for me. It is alive with words, images, and memories. It reminds me, most of all, of my greatest teacher, Rene Fortin. Rene Fortin taught me how to read. That may seem like an odd thing to say. After all, I had brought a young life of avid reading with me to college, but Dr. Fortin, as we called him, challenged us to see the page and through it the world in a new way. To be a real reader, he said, you've got to mark up the page. This may be the most important thing I've ever learned, and it seemed revolutionary at the time, even in the tumultuous era of the 1960s. We had spent the last 12 years of our young lives learning that books were not our property. They belonged to the school. If you write in these books, said one high school taskmaster, your parents will be required to pay for them. In a single class, Dr. Fortin persuaded us that what we once thought of as vandalism, writing in books, was an indispensable tool of learning. I find in my awkward scribbles on the pages of Dubliners an old treasure map of my learning, especially in the collection's final story, The Dead. In this agonizingly poignant tale, a husband named Gabriel discovers, through the chance singing of an Irish ballad, that a young man, Michael Fury, died long ago for the love of Gabriel's wife. I filled the margins of that story with brackets, check marks, and arrows. I underlined the words westward and the palm of her glove. I marked off telling sentences, such as, better pass boldly into that other world in the full glory of some passion, and fade and with end and wither dismally with age. At the end of the story, I scribbled this about the husband Gabriel. Wants to see that distant music is Irish romance. He sees it in his wife, mystery and grace, falls in love with his wife and with the mystery of the young man. By the second semester, focusing on modern poetry, I was marking up texts with a passion, circling key words, sketching patterns of language, finding meaning in the margins. To learn the craft of short writing, begin to think of marginalia as a genre. It will help to remember that writing in the margins is for an audience of one, the writer. The purpose is not publication, but learning, thinking, analyzing, discovering, and remembering. But marginalia has been uncovered and studied, sometimes in the work of distinguished authors and scholars. The most famous of these even has a name, Fermat's conjecture. Pierre de Fermat was a French mathematician. Every time I come up upon these names, I wish I would have gone to YouTube. And by the way, if you can go to YouTube and type in names and people will just help you pronounce them properly. I should have done that here. A brilliant scholar and lawyer who made many lasting contributions to the formal study of numbers, but none of them became as famous or infamous as a bit of unfinished business that began as nothing more than marginalia. The year was 1637. Fermat was reading an ancient Greek text called Arithmetica, written by a third century numbers guy named Diophantus. Something in the text tickled Fermat's imagination, moving him to jot this note in the margins, translated from the Latin. It is impossible to separate a cube into two cubes, or a fourth power into two fourth powers, or in general, any power higher than the second into two like powers. I have discovered a truly marvelous proof of this, which this margin is too narrow to contain. Too narrow to contain. It appears that Fermat never got on with the task of sharing his truly marvelous proof, and Number Nerd spent more than three centuries to seal the deal. In 1994, an English brainiac, Andrew John Wiles, turned Fermat's conjecture into his last theorem and took only 100 pages to do so. Wouldn't it be great to have Hemingway's original edition of Mark Twain's The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn? How about Sylvia Plath's personal copy of The Great Gatsby? It exists in a South Carolina library and offers wonderful insights into the mind of the young poet. It is not known whether Plath read Fitzgerald in high school or college, but her underlines and marginalia reveal an active and creative young mind. The most compelling is a note on a scene in which Tom and Daisy Buchanan are spotted through a window of their house as Gatsby walks up their driveway. Plath wrote, "Night, waiting outside, dragon goes to bed with princess." The website of the University of South Carolina Library comments that, with this note, Plath's annotation rises from mundane commentary to incisive interpretation. Many of Plath's later poems employ fairy tale allusions, usually with the inverted imagery she employs here. Writing in the margins of books is a way of trying things out. I threw away all my term papers from college and graduate school, but I have uncovered a map of my mind in the margins of the textbooks I have saved to this day. I had an affinity for poems about carnal love or spiritual love or both, which led me to the work of the 17th century poet John Donne. The Canonization, for example, is a 45-line poem in which the narrator fends off his friends and begs them to, quote, "let me love," end quote. While this is not the moment for a full explication, I can show you what I was thinking about in 1968. In my notes, I underline, circle, or bracket 23 words or passages. Check out what I scribbled in the margins. Petrarch, reconcile all opposites. Man, woman, reason, femininity. Movement from insignificance to significance. Through the movement from a fly to a phoenix. Eagle, traditional symbol of reason, flies into the sun. Fly, taper, both have short existence. Taper, funeral, insignificant, self-destructive. Phoenix, symbol of sex act. Stanza, room. Legend, life of saint. Sonnets, immortality. Neutral, two things are one. Continue to exist. Beg from above, asking them to intercede. Through the mirror of these markings, I recognize myself as a student learning to read the text closely in the tradition of what was called the New Criticism. These marks would lead to a piece of writing, an interpretation of the poem. But that is just the aftermath. The main work is in my head and in the margins of the text. Notes. 1. Never read a newspaper, magazine, or book without a pen nearby. You already talk back to the author in text, at least in your mind. Get in the habit of writing those thoughts in the margins of the page. 2. After you finished reading a work, do a quick review of your marginal notes. Use your daybook to continue the conversation with the author or to summarize your own arguments. 3. If you own an ebook reader, experiment with the notes mode to create the equivalent of marginalia. 4. Next time you're in a bookstore that sells used books, search to find some golden oldies in which an owner of a book, or more than one, talks back to the author in the margins. Search on the internet for marginalia and write briefly what you discover. So that's a cool little passage. It is part 6, chapter 6, from Roy Peter Clark's How to Write Short, Word Craft for Fast Times. Great book. I'll probably dart in and out of it over time, as I tend to do with all of these things. And I grabbed the book thinking he might have something interesting to say about writing, and regularly, daily, sharing it. It's been on my mind really from the get. After all, that's what this is. I'm not writing, but I'm forcing myself into the practice of speaking, talking, riffing with you all. This is unbelievably the 80th dispatch, and I've kept at it. It's now lunch, and I do want to get back to when I will do these before the sun rises. I did wake up today. Some of you have asked me, like, when do you go to sleep and stuff like that. So, a programming note. Last night, I stayed up too late. It was definitely past 11:30 when I fell asleep, and I don't know why. I got into doing stuff later. I like to go to sleep 10-something. And so I woke when the alarm went off at 4:50, and I did not want to be awake at 4:50. I went ahead and got up. Lately, I've focused mainly on simply getting up, getting vertical, doing anything, puttering around, making some breakfast, going on a much longer walk with the dog instead of, you know, the obligatory shortest one or whatever. And it's on my mind to try to actually dial up the discipline there, get in some exercise, and knock out a dispatch very early. So it's midday here. I do like this this book a lot. I want to go back through all of it. And I love the idea of writing in the margins, writing all over things. I find it really helps with magazines and things. In my job, sometimes I have to go through contracts and I'll highlight things and have basically a color coded thing, like big check of green and, you know, big question mark in the pink highlighter and a certain color blue or purple, whatever is handy. That's like, got to talk to our lawyer about this, that kind of thing. So even color on top of stuff really helps me. When I read a book, I do the same. Yellow is kind of bigger ideas. Pink is often for a person or place or date. And it's amazing when I go back to them how much it helps to hone in and remember. Somehow it's an additional layering of the material. And of course, picking up a book and going back to it is another layer through. And if you're revisiting the marks you've made on top of it, I do definitely find when I go to the extra step of writing my own words in the margins. And sometimes, too, I'll try to make my own index in the front or the back of books or other sources or things, my selection of the footnotes, things like that. Anytime I do that, it can be years later if I happen to grab the book, like happened a couple of months ago here through the dispatches with the talent code. I made extensive notes personally all over the talent code, and it's incredibly helpful to recall and remembering, and probably just the burn-in, the initial burn-in also has benefited. And I think I've mentioned before the Harry Ransom Center in town. This Clark here mentions Plath and Great Gatsby and her notes on a copy of it. The Ransom Center at UT Austin has among its amazing collections David Foster Wallace's papers, including his copies of Don DeLillo's books, on which he wrote extensively. Like he scribbled all over the place. In the books themselves. It's a cool practice. It's interesting, completely the opposite view. One of the regulars who would hang out with us routinely at Mozart's on Fridays, Javier, he prefers to keep his physical books, which he likes physical books. He reads a lot of ebooks too, but he likes physical books. But he prefers to keep them pristine. He doesn't want anything in there. Like it's a library book, you know, something that he has to return and other people are going to use. What he does, though, is if he has a really great passage, he'll take a photo of it. And he'll do the kind of notesy thing on a digital artifact of the physical book. But he prefers the physical books to be super clean. So there's all kinds of different modes and ways of doing this. I personally really like highlighting. And then it's a sign that I really appreciate a book when I start writing in the margins. And in Clark's term here, like having a conversation with the author. Sometimes, you know, an argument or something, it's super helpful. It helps as a reader and it helps as a writer. It helps to with all of that. So I'll find some stuff for the show notes here, regular.fm/8080, like the David Foster Wallace stuff. It's really great. And there too, they have like another example might be they have Robert De Niro's papers. And they have the screenplays where he made his notes through the readings and rehearsals and everything. And, you know, it's just incredible to see. And they also have notes within for the creation of a work draft, you know, the original draft and comments from editors and agents about it. And the internal notes through the revision process. We've talked about revising prose and other such things here recently. And to see these creators who rise to the sort of the greatest heights of the craft going through that messy process themselves, see the artifacts of that at least, is quite affecting. Hope y'all are having a great one, and I will talk with you tomorrow. Thanks, y'all.